Thursday. Just coming up with questions right now for Bruce Irvin. Bruce Irvin is going to be joining us in, I don't know, 20 minutes, half hour, whatever it is. You know what to do. Keep it locked to the home of the Falcons, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Rick Hamlin and John Michaels. PB is out here as well. We got the preacher man, Mark Owens, behind the glass at our Kia studios. And on the WadeFord.com hotline, we have Jason Longshore. He is the analyst for the Atlanta United Radio Network. And Jason, what's up, man? Good afternoon. You're hanging with me and John once again. We love these weekly interviews with you. Congratulations on moving on to the Eastern Conference Finals. Let's start there, my friend. Cheers.
Man, great performance from the guys on Sunday to see this out. Like, you get into playoffs, and we've seen it in all of our sports that we all follow. It's a different animal, and it's just a different level of intensity. That was a question for Atlanta United coming in, was would they be able to match that playoff intensity? You saw it on display at the Benz on Sunday. They're up for this.
Jason, when they got the penalty kick early and were able to go up 1-0 on the Joseph Martinez goal, did you feel like collectively that was just a, okay, now we've got things where we don't have to press as much? How important was it to get on top of them 1-0?
First goal was critical because if NYC had scored first, then you're completely even and everything's back to square one. You get the first goal, you still had ebbs and flows. Even when you got the second goal and you're up two goals in the series, NYC gets a goal back right before halftime. The first 15, 20 minutes of the second half, that was New York City's final shot to get a goal and then be chasing one more to take the lead in the series. That was where Atlanta really had to dig down deep and fight through it, and they did. You still had ebbs and flows, but that first goal, like you said, that gives you a bit of a cushion to live with, and I think it helped the team breathe a little bit and grow into the game.
Jason Longshore hanging out with Rick and John here talking about United's victory over NYCFC. So, Jason, I thought that the penalty drawn by Escobar, I forget the player that tackled him to get the PK for Joseph, I thought that was a little soft. It didn't look like an obvious PK to me, but hearing the roar of the crowd the second the whistle was blown, it seemed like everybody at the Benz knew that was going to be a PK. Were you like jumping out of your headset that PK, PK, or were you, you know what I mean? Or were you kind of like, that's a 50-50 deal?
I was jumping out of the headset on that one. And it's because of the way Franco Escobar set the whole thing up. And let's go back to the first pass. It's Darlington Nagbe splitting two defenders with a beautiful pass, perfectly weighted for Escobar to get to at the end line. And when he tries to cut it back and the New York player goes to ground, it's lights out. It's a penalty at that point because Escobar's cutting back to either cross or shoot. He's brought down by the tackle. Easy call for Geiger to make and not one that he could avoid in that case.
Jason, second goal is Miguel Almiron, just an absolutely unbelievable bending free kick in there. But I want to, you probably didn't get to see this on TV. We were watching it on the Falcons plane coming home. But the announcer said Miguel Almiron maybe took a little bit of liberty with where he placed the ball. They said, you know, it's okay a yard or two, but they felt like he might have moved the ball 5 or 6 yards forward. Did you see that? Is that something you kind of looked at and go, wow, Miggy's really taking liberties with this?
You know, it's funny, like when it happened live, it did enter my mind, like, wait a minute, that seems closer than where the tackle happened. That's a little bit more of where he fell down. It's not on Miguel Almiron. It's not on, you know, Atlanta United to give those yards back. Mark Geiger called the foul where he did. New York City backed off and lost their heads. They switched off, and you can't do that. Go back and look at, when there's a foul in the attacking half for the opposition against Atlanta United, go back and watch how Leandro Gonzalez-Pires or Eric Rometty stands right in front of the ball, one, to prevent a short free kick or a quick free kick, and two, to make sure that the kick is taken as far back as possible. So that's on New York City and on Geiger to not get the spot right. Miguel Almiron's going to take advantage of it every time.
Yeah, that shot was absolutely amazing. It reminded me a couple of those great set-piece kicks by Kratz early in the season. It was right up there with his best goals with Atlanta United for Miguel Almiron. We're the home of Atlanta United, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game on a Falcons Wednesday, and we've got Jason Longshore. I want to go back to the Joseph Martinez penalty kick goal. He does this, you know, jump-stop thing to kind of have the goaltender just hesitate, but I thought Sean Johnson committed too soon. Like, and Jason, sink my battleship, take me deep. But I like when you jump in the air, why are you diving to either side at that point? Let Joseph come back to planet Earth and tip his hand and then make your dive to one side or the other, because we know how long Sean Johnson is. Did you think Sean Johnson misplayed that PK?
He did. He overcommitted too early. But it's the delivery from Joseph. It's so different. It's so unique. And he does it different every time. That's the thing I've seen some people talk about, like, oh, well, why does he jump in the air? Why does he do this? Because sometimes he does and sometimes he doesn't. And if you're a goalkeeper and you're waiting for the jump in the air and he just steps straight up and rips it, you're flat-footed. If he jumps in the air, you're waiting to see where he's going to go. It's so unique, and he's able to stay in control doing it, that it throws goalkeepers off, and that's why you get Johnson diving to one side. Joseph comes down, just slots it into the other side, very casual.
Did you feel NYCFC was as bush league as I did watching them? Diving, falling, faking headbutts, falling on the ground, all kinds of theatrics. Did they realize they weren't better than Atlanta United and needed all of that to try to win?
Yeah, I think they realized that coming into the series, to be perfectly honest. You heard the conversations before the first game at Yankee Stadium about how they had to get the win at Yankee Stadium. Their road form has not been that great. They don't get the win at Yankee Stadium. They have to go on the road. And you get the conversations about diving and taking liberties and this and that. And then you watch the body language of the New York City players throughout the game on Sunday. After that second goal, even after they get one back, it looked like they were flapping their arms. They were putting their hands on their hips. They were frustrated. Maxi Morales could not find the ball. And then the cheap stuff. David Villa undercutting Brad Guzan was one that absolutely should have been a yellow card. No questions asked. It's a superstar call that he gets. Castellanos coming in and flopping all over the field and in trying to draw Brad Guzan into a headbutt that honestly even fooled some MLS digital folks on social media, where they were saying that Guzan headbutted him, and you watch the video and he absolutely did not headbutt it. That type of stuff, you know, you're out of the series and you're just reaching. You're trying to find a lifeline. It's not there.
So, Jason, I trolled NYCFC talking about how annoying their little itch players are, and I got like two responses back. And one of them agreed with me and one of them disagreed with me. It's like, way to represent, dude. Way to go. Nice job. But to John's point, I just totally – the H word is strong, but I strongly dislike these guys, okay? So for me, the hit list is – and I won't call him Villa. I call him Vila just to be super disrespectful. Morales and Castellanos. I think those three guys stand out as the most annoying of a very annoying team. Which of those three guys is more annoying to you?
Villa. It's Villa because of what he was as a player. This is one of the all-time greats in Spanish football, one of the best players to come to Major League Soccer. And we see it sometimes with athletes at the end of their career. A lot of times we see athletes kind of modify the way they play. I mean, you think of Michael Jordan at the end, where he was still productive, not same level of production, but he was a different player when he couldn't jump above everybody on the court. Villa, his modification was to get cheap, and we saw it at Yankee Stadium. We've seen it all season. Lots of diving, lots of cheap shots, and lots of things knowing that he can get away with it because of his name. And then that's what's frustrating about it, because he has been a great player. Great players, to me, true greats, don't act that way. They don't undercut goalkeepers.
Unfortunately, we see the result of Columbus, New York after Atlanta United wins, and it's the Red Bulls, and that's going to be the Eastern Conference Finals. Jason, you know it. This team has kind of had Atlanta United's number. How can Atlanta United best attack them and get to the MLS Cup?
I think you saw it in these two games against New York City. You play defensive. You make the opposition try to carry the game. Atlanta had 30% of the possession on Sunday at home and won the way they did. If you can replicate that and you make New York Red Bulls try to create chances themselves, that's their weakness. They have always struggled against teams that sit back and defend first. That's been their MO in the playoffs. This has been a team that's won 3 supporter shields in 6 years. This is not a team that's new to this position. But they've never been to MLS Cup. There's a lot of pressure on the Red Bulls to finally get over the hump with this team. And I think Atlanta, as the underdog coming into the series, very simply sits back, defends, plays direct, looks for the combinations between Almiron and Martinez, and gets numbers behind the ball and defense first.
Jason, do you anticipate the Red Bulls being as annoyingly chippy as NYCFC?
They'll be chippy, but a different kind of chippy. I think the thing about the Red Bulls is you know how they're going to play. There's no question about how intense their press is going to be, how hard they're going to pressure you physically. You know that going in and you expect it. I don't think you get the same level of diving and true cheap stuff with the Red Bulls. The Red Bulls will take their tackles and they'll take their hits and they'll put Miguel Almiron on his back and they'll try to put Joseph Martinez on his back and they'll look for those opportunities. But I think they're a little more straight up about it than NYC was in the series.
Jason, you mentioned pressure, and Jason Longshore, our guest on the WadeFord.com hotline, you hear him on the Atlanta United calls with Mike Conte. You mentioned pressure for in New York. But there's also pressure on Atlanta. Tata's going to be gone. Miggy's probably going to be gone. We'll see what other changes are coming for Atlanta United. Who has more pressure, the Red Bulls or the Five Stripes?
I think there's more pressure on the Red Bulls because they were the team that won the Supporters' Shield. They're the team that's been here a bunch and hasn't gotten through it. I think some will say there's more pressure on Atlanta because there's just a bigger spotlight on Atlanta. I mean, let's be honest here. Atlanta United had 70,000 people in their home leg of the conference semifinals. The Red Bulls didn't sell out Red Bull Arena. It's a different level of expectation because of that fan base, because of what Atlanta's done in a short period of time. But I think on the field, the players feeling it, the pressure's on the Red Bulls here to get the job done.
Jason, going back to the NYCFC match, I thought there were some amazing defensive plays. The save that Gazan had on Castellanos that frustrated Castellanos to the point where he, you know, faked the headbutt and all that BS. I think it was Parkhurst. I'm looking back through my notes. Parkhurst had an awesome, you know, header to disrupt a scoring opportunity for them. There were a couple of like, close in the box headers that were right at Kazan that he made the save. Just talk about the overall defense. I thought it was exceptional, especially in the second half.
Yeah, it was outstanding. I mean, this team never gets enough credit defensively, but they can't score all the goals that they've scored over the last 2 years, the highest scoring team in the league since 2017. You can't do that if you don't have that foundation of defense, and it really came out against NYC. Brad Kazan had 4 shots on goal in the series. That's it. New York City scored 1 goal, but Brad was really involved in coming out, grabbing crosses, physical presence in the 18, making sure New York City didn't get better chances. For me, Eric Rometty was the player of the series. He absolutely shut Maxi Morales down, who is New York City's playmaker, and to the point that Morales was trying to find a place on the field away from Rometty where he could get some touches on the ball and make something happen. Never happened. Nagby and Gressel in the second half. 2 guys who are not known for defense, dropping in and just doing the grinding it out work to get that result. And in the back line, Franco Escobar was outstanding. Parkhurst and LGP were 2 of the best defenders that we've seen in this league. Larenowitz in the first leg, just an absolute strong performance. Miles Robinson comes in after only starting 4 games during the season, steps right in, no drop-off. Overall, defensively, Atlanta United was top of the league in the series.
Jason, I'm not going to lie. I can't stand this international break right now and the fact that we have to wait 2 weeks for soccer and then you get a Sunday, Thursday. Who does that favor having that short turnaround the way that it is?
You know, the Sunday, Thursday, I actually like it for Atlanta. I think Atlanta has more depth than the Red Bulls. And I think if Atlanta comes in and wants to sit back and not press, Red Bulls are going to press. They don't have any other way to play. The Red Bulls play one way and that's it. They're going to press on Sunday night at Mercedes-Benz. They're going to have to turn around and press a couple days later at Red Bull Arena. That's not easy to do. That takes a lot out of your legs. I think the shortness of the series actually helps Atlanta. We'll see how everybody comes back from the break. The Red Bulls have a lot of guys out on international duty as well, so we'll have to keep our eyes on both teams.
It's really annoying, Jason. Okay? It's really annoying.
I'm right there
You wait 2 weeks, and then you play 2 matches in 5 days. What the hell? This is, come on, man. This is the pinnacle. That would be like, before the AFC and NFC championship games in the NFL, the teams played like a scrimmage against you. It just, it doesn't make any sense. And I'm wildly and sarcastically complaining here, Jason, because it is what it is. But it does not make any sense to me to play two matches in 2 weeks against New York City FC, take 2 weeks off, and then play two matches in 5 days. That just does not make sense to me.
I agree. It makes no sense. And Major League Soccer has to figure something out about this international break in November. They can't avoid it. That's a FIFA thing. Last year at this time, you had World Cup qualifying playoffs, which there's nothing you can do to avoid that. Right now, it's friendlies. It's a little different, but you're always going to have this window right here. MLS has to schedule to where you don't have this break in the middle of the playoffs. You either need to extend the regular season to where it finishes, then you have the break before the playoffs start, or you move everything up and you have MLS Cup, which would have been last week, and you're done before this break. The break in the middle of the playoffs kills the momentum for us locally. It kills the momentum nationally. It kills the momentum for the teams. I hate this window right here. MLS has to manage it better.
Jason, great stuff as always. Enjoy your break this weekend, and we'll talk to you next Wednesday.
Thanks, y'all.